So, so you're welcome. Yeah, we've been coming along. We're going through the book of Acts. This week we're on Acts 25. It's kind of a weird chapter. Not that it's weird in its context, but it's it was really straightforward. One of the simplest talks I've ever done. I honestly feel like anybody can. I'm basically just reading the Bible. That's how I feel. I'm just reading the Bible. I'm going to get up here. I'm going to share a couple thoughts. And that's going to be how it's going to roll. So, but let me review real fast just kind of what's been going on, where we're going with this chapter, what Paul's been going through. If you've been following along, Paul came into Jerusalem despite the fact that everybody, all the people from his churches, didn't want him to go because he had a feeling that if he went to Jerusalem, he probably wouldn't come back. He wouldn't be able to make it back to the churches in fear that he would die. He would get killed in Jerusalem. So everybody didn't want him to go, but he decided to go anyway. And he finally gets to Jerusalem, and he meets with the apostles. And he meets with them, and there's rumors going around that Paul is speaking badly against the Mosaic Law and that he no longer honors it, which is completely false. Paul doesn't disobey the law of Moses in any way, but all the rumors that the Jews heard or that they were sharing was that. Sorry, I was distracted by this pedal. It has lights on. Anyway, so rumor was going around that he wasn't honoring the law of Moses, and so. The apostles were talking to him. They're like, Paul, we think that you should go through the cleansing process in the temple and become ceremonially clean. That way you can have a voice to the Jewish people. You can have a platform so that you can share the gospel, or else they're not going to listen to you because they all hate you and they don't want you to be here and they all know that you are here. He says, okay, I'll do it. And so he goes through the whole process. He gets his head shaved, which I think is a pretty big deal. I'm a hair guy. He shaves his head. He does that. He goes through the entire process. He's ceremonially clean. But the thing is, some other Jews had seen him, and they accused him of bringing an unclean Gentile into the temple courts, which is punishable by death. And so, to make a long story short, he starts getting himself beat up. He's just getting the tar beat out of him. And more Jews keep piling on. He's basically getting beat up by the entire Jewish community, it seems. So severely that it causes a bunch of Roman guards to come off of the hill and have to pull him out. They don't even know why this guy's getting beat up, but they have to pull him out so that he doesn't get killed. And then as he's getting pulled out and he's safe now, he turns back to one of the commanders and he says, I need to speak to the people. And what that is that he needed to share the gospel. He wasn't going to go through a city and waste the trip and not share the gospel. See, everything was a loss if Paul didn't go somewhere and share the gospel. He considered everything else. He considered everything lost if it wasn't for the one thing, and that's sharing that Christ died and resurrected. And so that's what he did. He shared the gospel with these Jewish people. They didn't like it. And so they beat him up, and he nearly died. And so that's sort of what happened there. And then he goes, and they still don't know why he did, because he didn't do anything. He's just getting accused. And he stands in front of Felix, who's the Roman provincial governor at that time, because they're trying him, because the Jews are claiming that he broke the laws, and Paul's saying, I didn't break the laws. And so they go through that whole process where the Jews say, he did this, this, and this, and he says, no, I'm innocent, I didn't do any of that. I didn't bring an unclean Gentile into the courts. And so he has this trial before Felix, and even Felix says, you know, I don't think he did anything deserving of death, I don't think he's guilty, but yet he keeps him in prison, which is completely corrupt, but he did it because he wanted to please the Jews. He wanted to win their favor, because when you're a Roman provincial governor, in order to have a good term, you want to please the people of the city, which in that case would have been the Jews, so that there would have been peace between them. Anyway, so Paul stays in prison for like 2 years, and that's where we end, is that Felix, at end of chapter 24 that Steele shared last week, was Felix is getting succeeded by this guy named Festus, and that's where Acts 25 kicks off. So Festus is the new Roman provincial governor. Festus would never have been known had not Paul crossed his path. That's the only reason we know anything about Festus, because he takes office and then he dies 2 years after this. He's a member of the Roman, like a Roman nobility, but we know nothing about this guy because he's just a guy that came and happened to cross Paul's path, because Paul is one of the most influential men in history. And so anyway, he's the new Roman provincial governor. And the great thing about Festus is that he takes action. So we're going to kick off verse 1, chapter 25 of the book of Acts, where Festus is now the new governor. Verse 1 says, 3 days after arriving in the province. 3 days after. So he spent all this time waiting with Felix, and 3 days after arriving in the province, Festus is already doing things. It says he went up to Caesarea, from Caesarea to Jerusalem, where the chief priests and Jewish leaders appeared before him, presenting the charges against Paul. Now, Festus didn't go there to talk to the Jewish leaders about Paul, but that was the first thing that they brought up when he got there. So 2 years have gone by. You think it might have gotten to a mild state. But no, it's been stewing in their hearts to get Paul for the charges that he didn't even do. And so they bring that up to Festus right when he gets there. And it's the first thing that they did. So, because he went up there, Felix was the kind of guy who didn't leave the best situation for Festus. They pretty much hated Roman law at that time, the Jews did. They did not like Felix, they did not like the way he did his thing, and they were not happy with Rome, because that's the capital city anyway. And so he goes there to try to make peace with the Jews and to find out what his term in office would be like, and first thing that happens is they approach him about this guy named Paul. And Festus doesn't really know Paul, but they approach him about this guy, and so this is what they say. So they urgently requested Festus, as a favor to them, to have Paul transferred to Jerusalem, for they were preparing an ambush to kill him along the way. Festus answered, Paul is being held at Caesarea, and I myself am going there soon. Let some of your leaders come with me and press charges against the man there, if he has done anything wrong. So he says, no, I'm going to wait. If you guys really have charges against this Paul, then you're going to need to come to Caesarea. You're going to travel with me, and then you can present the charges against him there with him, and we can get on with it. I like how it said they urgently requested Festus as a favor to them, because it just shows that they know exactly why he came. They know what he was doing. That's his goal, is to try to make peace with the Jews. And so if he went there doing that, that's something he would want to do. But I really admire Festus for not giving into that type of temptation. Verse 6 says, after spending 8 or 10 days with them, he went down to Caesarea and the next day convened the court and ordered that Paul be brought before him. When Paul appeared, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many serious charges against him, which they could not prove. Then Paul made his defense. I have done nothing wrong. See, again, Paul says, I've done nothing wrong. I've done nothing wrong. But yet they keep bringing all these huge charges against him, and they have no evidence for it. He says, I've done nothing wrong against the law of the Jews, or against the temple, or against Caesar. The accusations were sedition, sectarianism, and sacrilege. And they can't prove any of them. He gets up there, and that's all he's saying. He's like one of those like jazzy lounge singers, who the ones that repeat that same line. You know, you got Michael Bublé, he's singing all those, I'm feeling good. You got Paul up there saying, for once in my life, for once in my life, I'm innocent. You know, he's just over and over and over again, I'm innocent. And over again, I'm innocent. I didn't do it. You know, that's kind of the picture I got. I was sitting in a restaurant when I thought of that, and I heard it over the radio. And I'm like, that's exactly how Paul felt, I guarantee you. Anyway, but they keep bringing all these charges, sedition, sectarianism, sacrilege, and they can't prove any of them. They can't prove them all. Anyway, alright, so he's standing trial. Where was I? Verse 9, Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, said to Paul, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there on these charges? And Paul knows that if he goes back to Jerusalem, that he'll probably get killed on the way, because that was the plan initially, trying to leave Jerusalem to go to Caesarea, was that they wanted to plan an ambush to kill him then, but only to be saved by 470 Roman soldiers. By God, really. He's the one that ordained that. So Then Paul answered, I am now standing before Caesar's court, where I ought to be tried. I've done nothing wrong to the Jews, as you yourself know very well. If, however, I am guilty of doing anything deserving of death, I don't refuse to die. But if the charges brought against me by these Jews are not true, no one has the right to hand me over to them. And he said, I appeal to Caesar. And what he did when he appealed to Caesar was that he instantly sent himself to Rome. Because when you appeal to Caesar, you got to go stand trial before Caesar, which would be Emperor Nero. He would have to go and speak to him. And when you think Nero, you're thinking, that's crazy. Nero's that crazy guy that kills all the Christians. But at this time, Nero didn't have that reputation of killing Christians yet. So Paul didn't really know who he was sending himself to. It wasn't the same crazy Nero that had killed several Christians. So he's on his way to Rome. But at the same time, he sort of did Festus a favor. Because when you send somebody to Rome to meet with the emperor, you have to file a report. And Festus still doesn't know what's going on. See, he sees this guy Paul, and he's hearing about all these charges. But the thing is he doesn't really understand all the charges, which I think we'll read here. Let me just continue. Verse 12 says, after Festus had conferred with his council, he declared, you have appealed to Caesar you will go. Okay, so I'll explain. Is that he doesn't really know what's going on. He's not familiar with the Jewish law. He's not familiar with Paul. He's kind of confused. He's like, what are these charges? These are not the charges that I would have expected to hear against a man. They're talking about this guy named Jesus and about how they claim that he's dead, but Paul keeps saying that he's alive. And I don't really understand what I'm supposed to write to Rome. What am I supposed to send to them? And so he's almost doing Festus a favor because now Paul is putting himself into the hands of the emperor and Festus doesn't have to do anything, but he still has to send a report saying why he's sending Paul to Rome, and Festus doesn't understand the charges. So at one point he's having a favor done, but he doesn't know what to send to Rome. Alright, so this next... guy that we're going to introduce, his name is Agrippa, King Agrippa. And the reason that he is coming is that he wants to honor Festus in his new Roman provincial governorship and come and see him and welcome him to the job. Let me introduce you to the Agrippas. They're the Herods. So if you're familiar with the Herod, it's Herod Agrippa. So Agrippa the First killed James, the brother of Jesus, and arrested Peter. And that was the same guy that was eaten by worms for not giving God glory. He got eaten by worms. They said, because he was talking, he was giving some sort of speech, and they said, this must be the voice of a God, not of a man. And he just kind of soaked it in, and instantly God struck him dead and was eaten by worms. That's one of them. The next, the one before that, Herod Antipas, I think I spelled it wrong. Anyway. So I can't pronounce it. Must be spelled wrong. Anyway, Antipas, I think, is what it is. Herod Antipas. That was the same guy that executed John the Baptist, and he even loved John the Baptist and met with him regularly. But the thing was is that he made a deal with his wife or
daughter.
Thank you. It was his daughter, and that say anything that you want, I'll give it to you. And she said, I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And he's like, oh shoot, I like that guy, but he had to kill him. So he, yeah, it's very unfortunate because he liked meeting with him and talking to him about Jesus. Anyway, so that Herod Antipas killed John the Baptist. The one before him, Herod the Great, murdered babies trying to kill baby Jesus. So this is the line that this Herod Agrippa is coming from. His two predecessors were complete criminal, terrible men. They were not good people. They did not like Christians. But this guy's not so bad. He's not too bad of a guy until you find out that he's having sexual relations with his sister. You're like, dude, man, if you're not killing people, you're just weird. What's your problem? Only if you're not killing people. Anyway. So, and that's his wife, Bernice, who is his sister. Gross. But Agrippa, the one good thing about Agrippa is that he is an expert in the Jewish law. He's been a king for several years. He's been around, and he is familiar with the way, which is Christianity. He's familiar with Jesus and how that whole thing has been going. And so he can be of much help to Festus, because Festus is unfamiliar with it. Agrippa is very familiar with it. So this is what's going to happen, is that Festus is going to spill on Agrippa, and Agrippa is going to say, I want to hear about that. So let's read. Verse 13, it says, a few days later, King Agrippa and Bernice arrived in Caesarea to pay their respects to Festus. Since they were spending many days there, Festus discussed Paul's case with the king. He said, there is a man here whom Felix left as a prisoner. When I went to Jerusalem, the chief priests and elders of the Jews brought charges against him and asked that he be condemned. I told them that it is not Roman custom to hand over any man before he has faced his accusers and has had an opportunity to defend himself against their charges. When they came here with me, I did not delay the case, but convened the court the next day and ordered the man to be brought in. When his accusers got up to speak, they did not charge him with any of the crimes I had expected. Instead, they had some points of dispute with him about their own religion and about the dead man named Jesus, who Paul claimed was alive. I was at a loss how to investigate such matters, so I asked if he would be willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial on these charges. When Paul made his appeal to be held over for the emperor's decision, I ordered him held until I could send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, I would like to hear this man myself. He replied, tomorrow you will hear him. So he shares this thing with Agrippa, and Agrippa's like, and what's neat about this is that Agrippa used a verb, or one of the words, I don't know which one it was, but the way that he said, I would like to see this man, it was said as if, in the Greek, it was said as if he had wanted to speak with him for a long time. Like he had been, oh, Paul, I know him, and I've been wanting to speak with him. Not, oh, this sounds interesting, I want to speak to him now. But he's been looking forward to speaking to Paul if he had an opportunity to. So that's the situation, is that we got King Agrippa and his wife Bernice and Festus, and they want to speak with Paul. And the thing about this next part is that Paul doesn't have to accept and speak. But yeah, he does it anyway. And he's going to be speaking to an interesting crowd. Did I bring up the... I did. I'm going to read to you who will be present at this next... Well, it's the same story. He's just confessing and he's saying, I'm innocent. But it's a little bit more in depth. The one with Festus was very quick, very short, very brief. He's going to lay it all out in chapter 26, which I don't get to share, but Paul's going to go all out and share it all. About Jesus and the resurrection and stuff like that. But these are the people that will be attending, listening to Paul. This is his audience. It says, Agrippa and Bernice, the Jewish king and his queen was there. Festus the governor was there. The high-ranking officers were present. And these would be the commanders in charge of the Roman military divisions stationed in Caesarea. And there were five of them at any given time. So there would have been at least five of them present. There were also the leading men of the city, perhaps some of them retired military personnel, but most of them merchants, and those who would have money and be in positions of influence. And so Paul gets to walk into this amazing audience. There are going to be no Jews there, but he's going to walk into this audience, and he's going to be able to share to a bunch of Roman nobility and leaders. Okay, look at the opportunity that Paul has. He can decline, but he doesn't. He wouldn't anyway, but he gets the opportunity to share the gospel to all these people. So in verse 23, it says, the next day Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp. Let me just share a little history of the word pomp. In the Greek, it's the word fantasia, where we get our word fantasy, which is fleeting or which is passing. And when he says it, Luke wrote this, so he's saying they entered with great pomp. He's sort of mocking them. He said, yeah, they entered with all their flashy jewelry and their nice robes and whatever, but it's fleeting. It's passing away. They will die, and their riches will be gone. That's basically what he's saying about these people that are coming in. And then, I just love that Luke wrote that, because the gospel of Jesus Christ will never fade away. Those are true riches. What Paul is doing, that is true riches, but these people walk in and they look all nice and they put on this facade and this appearance. And he says, they came in with great pomp, but it's fleeting. It's passing away. I want you to always remember that. Treasures of this world will pass away.
That's why we're told to store up our treasures in heaven. All right, so let's continue. It says, they came in with great pomp and entered the audience room with high-ranking officers and the leading men of the city. At the command of Festus, Paul was brought in. Festus said, King Agrippa and all who are present with us, you see this man. The whole Jewish community is petitioning about him in Jerusalem and here in Caesarea, shouting that he ought not to live any longer. I found he had done nothing deserving of death, but because he made his appeal to the emperor, I decided to send him to Rome. I have nothing definite to write to his majesty about him. Therefore, I have brought him before all of you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that as a result of this investigation, I may have something to write. For I think it is unreasonable to send on a prisoner without specifying the charges against him. So Festus brings him in, and Paul's going to share a very detailed description of what he's doing. He's going to be sharing the gospel with these people. And the thing, Paul, this is what I love about Paul. And no matter where he goes, when he walked into Jerusalem, he's getting beaten. I don't think Paul left Jerusalem feeling like he left anything to question. I don't feel like he went in there and then when he left, regretted, like, oh, I didn't share that, or I didn't say that. I wasn't loving enough. I wasn't this. I wasn't that. Because I think every place that he went, he gave his all. And even when he has the opportunity to rest, and he doesn't have to do these things that he's doing, he decides to do them anyway because he considers everything a loss except for sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. I had a pretty disturbing phone call on Sunday. I was sitting at home. I was just got done cleaning. The football game was on. And I got a call from my dad, and I can tell he'd been crying. And initially, I thought that, well, my parents are divorced, and he lives with my grandma. He's not remarried. And so he calls me, and I could tell he'd been crying, and he's speaking to me very gingerly. He's like, "Are you busy?" I'm like, "No, I'm not busy. I'm not doing anything. What's going on?" He's like, "I think I need you to take me to the hospital. I promised your sister that I would call you and tell you to take me to the hospital." I was like, "Okay, I'll be there as soon as I can." He was all the way out in Draper. So I got in my car, and I prayed, and I was instantly thinking, I just feel like I left too much on the table. And it was the hardest 20-minute drive I think I've had, because I just didn't feel like I had given all my love. I hadn't given all of what I had to offer to my dad. And my dad's health situation is poor. It is not good. He's okay now. He's home. He actually went to work today, just to let you know. But it's not good. At any time, he could actually overdo it. He has aneurysms in his head. They could burst and he could die. At any time. If his blood pressure gets so high that it causes his veins to burst, it would kill him pretty much instantly. And I kept thinking that. I was like, I've wasted so much time not loving my dad like Jesus Christ would love my dad. And that was the hardest time throughout. I spent hours and hours and hours with him. I probably spent 12 hours, 14 hours with him Sunday in the hospital. I went back Monday and took work off. Just trying to figure out what it was. Just trying to figure out why he was having these weird headaches. Trying to figure it out. And we waited so long just for any kind of answer at all. And Monday was good news. And it's like, okay, we can let you go home. I discussed the entire issue with a bunch of neurosurgeons and stuff like that. I'm like, you're good to go home. There's really not much we can do for you. Just take care of yourself. And that's what it came down to. Which was nice. It gave me a chance to spend time with my dad, to love my dad. But it really was a gut check. It was a check for me. It's like, I need to love my dad. I don't want to leave anything on the table. And as I read these stories, as we're getting through the book of Acts and we're looking at Paul's life, I don't feel like he ever left anything on the table. I feel like he gave his all 100% every single time. whether or not he was discouraged, whether or not he was beaten, bloodied, nearly dead, he still had a message to share. He still had something to say. He still had love to give. And what's great about this is that in 27 and 28, he's going to sail to Rome, and he's going to write the book of joy, Philippians, after going through all of this. And it's just like, this guy inspires me. And I hope that he inspires all of you. I don't want to leave anything on the table. I want to love like crazy. Steele's song, Burn, is amazing. When I think of burn, I think of how can I love practically. That's the best. You know what I hate? As I hate youth conferences when they go and you get on fire for Christ, but then I come back and I don't have any practical teaching of how to continue to burn for Christ. That was one thing that I always hated when I was growing. I didn't really understand how to maintain the fire. It's like, but I'm growing and I'm trying to realize practical love. What is practical? What can I do? You know, you think of all these amazing things. Well, I'm going to go across the world and I'm going to share the gospel to anybody that I can share the gospel to. I'm going to share it in my neighborhood. No, that's not practical. What's practical? Think of something that you wouldn't normally do. Who knocks on their neighbor's door anymore? Nobody. It's like, go and talk to your neighbor and see what they're doing for dinner. Go and give them cookies. Go take a homeless guy out for lunch. Go do something that's out of the ordinary, that's practical, that you can do. That's burning for Christ. That's the kind of love that we don't see in today's world anymore. And it's simple, practical things. That's what I want to do. Practical things. To love people, to show them the love of Christ. So we're going to continue on with chapter 26. You're going to hear all about Paul's, what he's going to say to these people. He's going to really feed it to Agrippa. It's going to be great. You guys are going to enjoy it. But let's pray. God, thank you for tonight. Thank you for the book of Acts. And thank you for that we can see. Thank you that we can see your spirit moving in it. Jesus, thank you that you inspired a man named Paul. And that he gave his all. And that he was willing to go anywhere that you asked him to go. And he was willing to do anything that you asked him to do. And he shared the gospel and he loved on a lot of people. In the face of death. God, I pray that we would all live like that. And I pray that we would love like you love, which is love others more than we love ourselves. God, I pray that you would help us to love that way. Bless our breakdown groups. Jesus, speak to each and every one of us. And we love you. Bless the rest of our evening. In your name we pray. Amen.